I'm going to turn to your Bibles to the book of Philippians. It is page 1681 if you're in the Pew Bible. Tonight, for a little while, we're going to do a kind of an overview of this book to set our minds for our study this month. I personally really thought the study for Galatians went very well. I thought I learned a lot. Some things I didn't realize, and when you put it into context, that was a pretty good study. Well, I started looking at Philippians. Philippians, in my mind, you know, it has a completely different vibe than the book of Galatians. Whereas the book of Galatians is almost confrontational at times. Paul is very agitated with the church of Galatia. And so he's using words like, you foolish Galatians. He uses phrases like, let him be accursed. There's a lot of things that's kind of harsh, the writings of Paul to the Galatians. But when we get to Philippians, it's not like that. Philippians is a different style. It's a different kind of book. I think it's kind of interesting as we put them in contrast one with another, the book of Philippians and the book of Galatians. So for a little while tonight, we're going to study this. So for a text, I'll just read from Philippians 1, verses 3 through 5. And listen to how nice the Apostle Paul can be. He says, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, making requests for you with all joy, for your fellowship in the gospel, from the first day until now. The Apostle Paul has a little bit different opinion of the church at Philippi. And so let's look this evening and try to get a study of why that's the case and get a broad overview of this book of Philippians. Before we go further, though, let's go to God. Well, in my math classes, I always enjoy using mnemonics, things to help people remember stuff. And sometimes they're kind of corny, but sometimes that's the best way to help kids remember stuff. Well, I learned this one. Try to remember where Philippians is. Mike told me this a long time ago. He didn't know how to spell, apparently, but he had the right idea. He says it's the word gypsy. So it's G-E-P-C. So you got Galatians, and then Ephesians, and then Philippians, and then Colossians. I'll throw that out there for you to help you remember how to find in the Bible. It's gypsy. Mike can't spell, but he has good ideas about mnemonics, so I appreciate that. So here's an overview of the book of Philippians. The Apostle Paul is the author, and it is so claimed in the first chapter, the first verse, and there doesn't seem to be any dispute about that across any of the scholars, that the Apostle Paul was the writer. Now, there is some discussion about the date. I put the date from 60 to 62 A.D. somewhere in that ballpark. That seems to be the most accepted. Some will go as early as the year A.D. 50. And the reason that is because, as we'll see in a second, Paul wrote this from prison. And so people tried to go back and find which time he was in prison to put a date on it. And most of the scholars will agree that it was in the year 60 to 62 A.D. when he was in prison in Rome. And that was the last imprisonment of his life. He'd eventually be executed, or maybe the next to last time. Kind of hard to say. For the purpose of this letter, if you're going to start reading through it, and by the way, we have homework again, read the whole book of Philippians this month. Just read through it. Focus on joy and a lot of gratitude and encouragement towards the Philippian brethren, as well as the word fellowship. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. There's several different words that are translated, or a Greek word that's translated different ways. One way is fellowship. And again, Apostle Paul wants this church to grow together and to be one cohesive unit. Pretty good admonition for us today as well. So the book of Philippians is a good book to read because it is a book of encouragement. And so just like they had problems back in their day, we're going to have similar problems today. And so the book of Philippians is very handy in understanding how to get along with one another. On the website, I did post the question from Johnny Elmore. Just like I did in the book of Galatians, I have a list of questions for Johnny Elmore. So pull those up, answer them, help study. So Philippians, first chapter, verse 1 says, Paul and Timothy, bondservants of Jesus Christ, to all the saints in Christ Jesus who are in Philippi with the bishops and deacons. So from that very first verse, Paul established himself as the author of this letter. And as I said, there's no doubt about it. Go to verse 7. Just as it is right for me to think this of you all, because I have you in my heart, Inasmuch as both in my chains and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, you are all partakers with me of grace. So when Paul says he's in chains, yeah, that is a reference to the fact that he is imprisoned. And most people, as I said, think that he was imprisoned in the city of Rome. And so you can get a whole bunch of different ideas from different commentators. Some will say he wrote it from Corinth. Some will say he wrote it from Ephesus. I really don't know. But I do know that Paul was a prisoner. And so as you think about that, and as you read through the chapters, I want you to remember that Paul is a prisoner. And some of the words he says are just rather amazing and spectacular, that it was written by a prisoner. It's just amazing, the way the things that he says and the faith that he had and the confidence he had, despite the fact that he was a prisoner. And he wasn't any prisoner. He was a prisoner in Rome. You know, I referenced one of my favorite TV shows, old Hogan's Heroes. One of my favorite parts of that, of course, they're World War II, so they're a lot of making fun of Germany and the Nazi parties and all. And one of their lines is, the Germans, they'll tell somebody, listen, you're going to have a fair trial. Afterwards, you'll be shot. And that's kind of the way it went. The Germans, they may give them a trial, but they'd already decided they were going to be shot. Sort of the same way with the Romans. I don't think there was a lot of fair trials in Rome under Nero. And the Apostle Paul had a pretty good idea that this was probably the end of the road. But even so, he's unbelievably optimistic. He's very positive. He's full of words of encouragement. And just keep this in mind. He's a prisoner as he's writing this book. So Philippi is actually the first European church. I don't know if you've thought of that before. Normally, this is what is referred to as the second missionary journey of the Apostle Paul. He left from Antioch. And he went into Galatia. And so these are the cities of Lystra and Derbe and Iconium. So this is most likely who the book of Galatians was written to. And so then he ended up in a little city right here on the coast. It's called Troas. T-R-O-A-S. Troas. From Troas, we're going to find out that he had a vision. And a man from Macedonia was in the vision. Macedonia is over here. And he said, come talk to us. Come over here to Macedonia. And so he did. And so the Apostle Paul took off from Troas, and he ended up at the city of Philippi. And that's where the church of Philippi was established. So it was the first European church to be established. Everything else was in Asia. And so that's kind of a big deal, because the church is now spreading. It is now growing and growing, and we've now breached out into a new area, a new region, this region of Europe. Philippi is a beautiful city. If you want to, get online and Google Philippi. A whole lot of archaeological finds about the city of Philippi. It's probably one of the most well-preserved cities of antiquity. This was the great theater of Philippi. So that was kind of cool. That's a pretty neat little picture there. There's another one in Ephesus that was found. But sometimes these stadiums, you might call them, are amphitheaters. They could seat 20,000-30,000 people. That's pretty neat to look at. It still exists today. Lots of relics still remain. So get on Google and look up Philippi. A lot of neat things left in the city. The city of Philippi had a very interesting history. And we almost have to know this to get some understanding of some of the things that are said in Philippians. In the year 42 B.C., the city gave its name to the battle of Mark Antony and Octavian Caesar, or Octavian at that time, against Julius Caesar's assassins, Brutus and Cassius. Okay, so think all the way back, probably sophomore year of high school, you had to read a play written by Shakespeare called Julius Caesar. Okay? So in the play, which is based off of this real event, you had Julius Caesar. And he had some conspirators, remember, Brutus and Cassius. And so they devised a plan to assassinate Julius Caesar. And a bonus question, what day did they kill him on? I remember. It was the Ides of March. Remember that? March 15th, the Ides of March. And so they snuck up and they stabbed him and they all attacked him. And according to Shakespeare anyway, as soon as old Brutus stabbed him, old Julius Caesar turned down dying, looked to him and said, Et tu, Brute? Even you, Brutus, even you have conspired against me. Well, anyway, so after Julius Caesar's died, Brutus and Cassius kind of formed a rebellion there in Rome. And then you got Mark Antony and Octavian. And Mark Antony you may have heard about because he later on got mixed up with Cleopatra. So you got Mark Antony and this Octavian. Memory does not serve me very well. He was somehow kin to Julius Caesar. May have been a stepson. I can't remember. Nephew. I don't remember. Somehow the lines got really blurred in ancient Rome anyway. Cousins, children, they were all basically not a lot of branching of the old family trees. But anyway, Mark Antony and Octavius, they formed the pro-Roman forces together. And then you've got Brutus and Cassius. And they met at Philippi in this great battle. And I want to say it was the largest land battle in the history of the Roman Empire, at least up to that point. It was a huge, huge battle. And Mark Antony and Octavius, they were able to defeat Cassius and Brutus and all their forces. And because of that, Philippi was given a special designation. They were considered a colony of Rome. So they were given the same rights and privileges as if they lived in the city of Rome. And there wasn't many places that could make that distinction. So the people of Philippi were very proud of their heritage and the fact that they were citizens of Rome, that they were a colony of Rome. Some years later, the city gained the honorary title, there you go, the Colonium, however you say that in Latin, and it became somewhat of a little Rome. It was a military town. A lot of the Romans would retire there, and it became somewhat of a little Rome. People acted like they did in Rome, and they dressed like they did in Rome, and everything was just kind of a little Rome. They were very, very proud of their heritage, very, very proud of their citizenship, that they were citizens of Rome in this colony, which might explain this verse in Philippians 3:20. The Apostle Paul says, "For our citizenship is in heaven." He said, "Don't forget." Those of y'all that y'all are so wired up about your citizenship of Philippi, he says, "Your citizenship is in heaven, from which we also eagerly wait for the Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ." So there's just kind of some background information there that the Philippians were very, very proud of their city. They were very proud of their heritage. They were proud of the fact that they had citizenship in Rome. I'd like to give you a good outline of the book of Philippians. I will tell you it's kind of difficult. Paul's going to begin with a prayer for the Philippians. We read part of it for our text. We'll hear that beautiful little part. I thank God upon every remembrance of you. Pretty. He then gives some examples. Then he's going to talk about commitment to Christ and the importance of unity and how important it is that they all be of the same mind. And then he's going to close with some benedictions and some blessings amongst the people. But I will tell you, the book is rather difficult to outline because it seems to kind of jump around in thought. He'll start talking about one thing, and he goes to something else. And I have a couple of reasons for it. One is because it's a personal letter. And Paul was very, very comfortable with the Philippians. And so when he's writing to him, he's not writing it as an epistle. So it's a letter, just like he is writing to his friends. The other reason may be, some scholars think that the book of Philippians is actually either two or three different letters that's been compiled. And they say that because of the use of the word therefore. And there's several times in the book it'll say therefore. And it sounds like he is closing his train of thought. And some people think, well, that's the end of the first letter. And then we're going to go to a second letter. And it says therefore again. That's the end of the second letter. And then now we go to the third letter. I don't know. I don't know what it is. But I'm confident that the Apostle Paul is the author. But as you read through it, you're going to notice he does kind of jump around a little bit. And it's kind of hard to stake down a real good outline. Here's a timeline. Year 30, roughly, would have been the crucifixion of Jesus. Year 34, somewhere in that ballpark, Saul was converted to Christianity. 37 AD would have been Cornelius converted to Christianity, the first Gentile convert. And here we go. Some 13 years later, Paul established the Church of Philippi. About 6 years later, Paul revisits the church of Philippi. So this AD 50 was known as the second missionary journey. AD 56 is commonly referred to as the third missionary journey. And Paul went back and he revisited the different congregations that he had helped to establish. And then again, I'm going to go with the year 60 to 62 AD was when this book was written. And 7 years later, Paul was executed. So let's go back to the book of Acts. And we'll talk a little bit about how the gospel was taken to Europe. If you want to, turn to Acts chapter 16. Because this tells the story. There's basically three different converts that we're told about in this area. I say converts, I have to kind of put a little question mark because one of them I'm not sure that was ever converted. We'll talk about that in a minute. But in Acts chapter 16, verse 8, it says, "So passing by Mysia, they came down to Troas, and a vision appeared to Paul in the night. A man of Macedonia stood and pleaded with him, saying, 'Come over to Macedonia and help us.' And now after he had seen the vision, immediately we sought to go to Macedonia, concluding that the Lord had called us to preach the gospel to them." So Macedonia is in Europe. So this was something new. They had never done that. And so here they are at Troas. Remember our map that was right there in between on the coast. And so they had never gone west until now. So this vision says, come over into Macedonia. And Paul agrees that's what they should do. So in Acts 16 and 12 says, "And from there to Philippi, which is the foremost city of that part of Macedonia, a colony." So the Bible even tells us that Philippi was a colony. It makes reference to that because that was so important in the mind of the Philippians that they were a Roman colony. So they've now gone to Philippi, and we're going to meet our first convert at the city of Philippi. Acts 16 and 13 says, "On the Sabbath day we went out of the city to the riverside, where prayer was customarily made, and we sat down and spoke to the women who met there." Now you got to kind of read between the lines a little bit. Because when the Apostle Paul went into a new city, his MO was to go to the synagogues and preach. And so he would go to the synagogues and he would begin to preach. And a lot of those Jewish Christians, as I don't like to use that term, but that's basically what would happen. He would find these Jews that were very knowledgeable of the Messiah, and he'd begin to preach to them. And then they would be converted to Christianity. Well, when he got to Philippi, it was on the Sabbath day. Notice he didn't go to the synagogue. It says he went down to the river. And it says that was their custom. Because that's where people made prayers. That's where the Jews made prayers, was down by the river. And it also says he spoke to the women who met there. Notice it didn't say anything about speaking to the men. A lot of people think that that's because if you didn't meet in the synagogue, it was very fair to assume that the Jewish population was very small in Philippi. In fact, to have a synagogue, you had to have 10 men. You had to have 10 Jewish men in order to form a synagogue. So maybe they didn't have 10 Jewish men. And so instead of having a synagogue, they just had to meet in a van down by the river. And that's where all the women met. It was a very, very small Jewish community. So you're going to notice we don't have that same pounding of faith of work, you know, salvation by faith and salvation by works in Moses that we talk so much about in the book of Galatians. We talk so much about the rites of circumcision and so much in Galatia. That conversation is going to be very, very slight in the book of Philippians, because there wasn't a strong Jewish contingency in the population. They had different problems. It was different than what the Galatians had. So, very small Jewish population. So we have three converts in that, Acts chapter 16. The first one is a lady by the name of Lydia. And the Bible tells us that Lydia was a seller of purple. I guess she was sometimes, she sold dye. And she sold clothing. And she was a pretty good businesswoman. She was very well known. Again, not the type of person that we have read about being converted to Christianity. Lydia's kind of, to excuse the pun, she's kind of cut from a different cloth. She's not, that's not what we have seen normally as converts. I put a question mark on the second one, because very soon after there was a demon-possessed girl. And I don't know that she was ever formally converted to Christianity. We do know that Lydia and her household were baptized. The demon-possessed girl, Paul helped her, helped this demon-possessed girl, and it ended up getting thrown in jail. Paul and Silas were thrown in jail. Now, I don't know if she became part of the congregation at Philippi or not. But then we get, while they're in jail, we meet up with the story of the Philippian jailer. And he and his household were also baptized. So this forms the beginning of the church at Philippi, the household of Lydia, the household of Cornelius, or I'm sorry, the household of the Philippian jailer, and quite possibly this demon-possessed slave girl. I'm not sure. So it's kind of interesting mixture of converts. It's not normal for what the early church was, but the church grew, and the church thrived. Acts 16 and 40 tells us that when they left prison, Paul and Silas were finally allowed to leave prison. So they went out of the prison and entered the house of Lydia. And when they had seen the brethren, they encouraged them and departed. So in a very short time, it seems that the house of Lydia became somewhat of the meeting place for the church of Philippi. You know, it's very easy to look at these events in isolation. Have you ever thought about that? Put yourself back in that place. So Lydia has just been converted. The Philippian jailer may have been going over to Lydia's house. It's just kind of neat to think about that we hear all these stories in isolation. But these are real folks, and they all live in the same area. And I guess they probably started getting together and talking. It's just neat that the Philippian jailer probably knew Lydia. It's a neat story. But anyway, let's talk about that. What was right with the church at Philippi? And there was a lot of things right. One is this Greek word here. Koinonia. How you pronounce that. That is translated several different ways in the book of Philippians. Partakers, fellowship, shared. Paul was very happy with them that they were part of the solution. They were partners with him. They were in fellowship with him as far as the gospel goes. They weren't waiting for Paul to come around and tell them what to do. They were co-laborers. They were working with Paul. Number two, they were very benevolent. In fact, as you get to the end of the chapter, Paul is going to be very, very thankful about how the Philippians financially took care of him when nobody else would. The Philippians were the congregation that were finding money and supplies and sending them to the Apostle Paul on his journeys. And number three, they were filled with joy. Very happy. The word joy is used some 16 times in this little bitty book. They were happy people, and Paul commended them. Here are a couple of verses for each one. Philippians 2 and 12. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. We've heard that verse a lot, right? It's the idea of being a co-laborer. We don't expect someone to come in and drop salvation on top of us. It has to be a partnership. It has to be a fellowship. And so Paul used that word several times in the book. Philippians 4 and 15, he says, now you Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church shared with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only. See, the Philippians were kind of the bankroll for the Apostle Paul. And he appreciated that. They were a benevolent, giving group. And finally, remember the word joy? Philippians 4 and 4, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice. Be happy. Enjoy what you've got. Be thankful for what you have. And that theme is repeated throughout the book of Philippians. So as you read it, start looking for those themes to come forth. However, we've got some problems with Philippi. So what was wrong with the church in Philippi? Well, as we talked about in Galatians, remember the weak Christians and the strong Christians, and there were some who were trying to go back into Judaism. And there was the circumcision, and there was this whole argument about Titus and why he wasn't circumcised. I mean, we had this big old massive blow-up in Galatia. There was a little bit of this going on at Philippi. But the Jewish contingency was not as strong as it was in Galatia, so it wasn't quite as much of a problem yet. But there was an issue of the Jewish Christians again. Number two, there was some petty arguments amongst the brethren that were keeping them from reaching their full potential. And number three, there was a specific dissension mentioned between these two women. I don't even know how to pronounce it, I'm not even going to try. But there was two women there. I don't know what the problem was. But they had an issue that was bad enough that the Apostle Paul called both of these women out. And he didn't take any sides on the issue. And he doesn't tell us what the issue was. He just said, y'all need to fix this. Y'all need to get this issue taken care of. Apparently we had some headstrong women battling about something, and it was making the church less effective. So, a couple verses, go pick up on it. Philippians 3, verses 2 through 3. Beware of dogs. Beware of evil workers. Beware of the mutilation. That word mutilation means cutting. And what that's in reference to is the idea of circumcision. So he doesn't even come out and say it, that there were some people who were trying to reinforce circumcision. And he called it the mutilation or the cutting. And I think the reason he does that is because these were not people that were looking for circumcision in a religious sense. All it was a physical act of cutting. And so he doesn't really even give them much, he doesn't give them a lot of substance on that. He kind of blows them off that they're just of the mutilation. They just like to cut. He says, "For we are the circumcision, who worship God in the Spirit, rejoice in Christ Jesus, and have no confidence in the flesh." So there was beginning to be some of this Jewish Christian and going back to Judaism. It was beginning in Philippi. And so Paul is saying, beware. He says, be careful. I think Paul knows what's coming. He's seen it before in other congregations. He says, beware. Philippians 2, verses 3 through 4. Remember he said there's some petty arguments. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. So I don't know what was going on in Philippi, but there must have been some little petty stuff going on that people weren't getting along real well. And the Apostle Paul said, listen, you've got to fix this. You've got to get along better. Esteem others better than yourself. And then finally, here's the two women in Philippians 4 and 2. I implore Euodia and I implore Syntyche. I have no idea how to pronounce those. To be of the same mind in the Lord. Well, I don't know what these two women were fighting about, but it was enough to get called out by the Apostle Paul in his writings. So, but they kind of wished they hadn't been acting so crazy. So I don't know what it was, but they got called out. So in conclusion, it seems the Apostle Paul wrote a letter of both encouragement and warning to the church in Philippi. It's not going to be the same as the letter of Galatians. It's not going to be as harsh. There wasn't an attack from the outside so much. Paul is very encouraging. He's very uplifting. He's very upbeat. But at the same time, it's a letter of warning because there were some things that were beginning to pop in, like this idea of the circumcision and these petty little arguments. And you know how little bitty arguments can fester and grow over time. I think the Apostle Paul saw that there were some problems on the horizon. So he said, hey, we've got to fix this. Paul was very emotionally tied to this group. He loved them very dearly. They helped him. And they were some of his closest friends, it looks like. But he had worries about them moving forward, and I think he knew that there were some problems coming. And I also think that he realized that he was not going to be around to help them. I think that's probably the biggest part. Paul is in prison. Don't forget that. The whole time you read this book, don't forget Paul is in prison. And the chances of him ever being released are probably rather small. And he knew there was a chance he would never see these people. And these are people that he loved dearly, and he wanted them to fix whatever problems they had and go forward. And think of it like this. The letter appears to be Paul's last words to a very close group of close friends. And so if I was going to make my last words, my last testament, I don't think I could say it any better than what he said at the end of the book. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. So that's the last words from the Apostle Paul in prison to a group of people that he loved dearly, that he didn't want to fall into any type of disrepair. So the book of Philippians is a neat little book. It's going to be very different than what we studied in Galatians because it's just a different situation. They did not have the same problems. They had problems, don't get me wrong, but it was not the same type of problems that Paul was fighting in Galatians. So I think it's interesting how we can see how Paul dealt with different people.